Hello and welcome back to Mindful Minds. We have not done an episode that's just a Q&A really ever. We did kind of like a partial Q&A a few episodes back, but for those of you who aren't aware, this is going to be a Q&A episode. I decided to do two episodes this week. So we have another episode that came out today that you guys can go check out. And then this is just an episode of questions that you guys sent in. Some of them are from TikTok, some of them are from Instagram, and we're just going to roll through them and answer as many as we can. You guys sent in some great questions, and they all really do center around deconstruction. And I think that that's become a pretty common theme for this page and the podcast is y'all want to talk about deconstruction. You want to talk about religious trauma, and I get it. And so as much as I don't want the podcast to become an only deconstruction podcast, because part of, I think, deconstructing is learning and unlearning all of the stuff that religion taught you and figuring out what other human experiences are like. And that's kind of the whole reason I started the podcast. So I very much so want to still stay in that lane. But I figured if we're going to do a few episodes, probably, you know, a few episodes every few months about religious deconstruction and trauma, why not dig into what that looks like in a Q&A format? And if you guys have questions, let's answer them. So before we get into it, obviously we're going to be talking about religious deconstruction, some religious trauma, some purity culture, and also just some spiritual abuse. So I wanted to preface that for this episode. And, you know, let's hop into it. So I'm going to literally just be answering them off of Instagram. I also wanted to give a quick update for those of you who haven't listened to the previous episode. We have redone our website. And so if any of you are here from the Serafina blog days, first of all, fucking props to you for sticking around this long. But this page used to be a blog. So my Instagram page used to be like a blog that I would write on and then would put it on my website and start off as a WordPress. Then we did a website. And then the podcast started in 2021. But the blog has been going since like 2016. So as much as I love writing, I really feel like podcasting is where I've kind of found my niche. And so I decided to end serafinablog.com. I know, very sad. But I decided just to rehouse all of those blog posts. And so they now all live on mindfulmindspod.com. I still will probably write. I just don't want to hold myself to a schedule. I used to, you know, post like 2 to 4 blog posts a month. And now that I'm doing 2 podcast episodes a month, trying to also do like 2 blog posts a month is a lot. So I still will write, but I want to write because I'm inspired to do so, not because I feel pressured due to a schedule. But we still probably will have some blog posts at some point. And if you want to look at those, like I said, they're all just going to be on mindfulmindspod.com now. And then in addition to the blog, we also put frequently asked questions, press, like all the different things we've been featured in, which is really fun. And then we put our sponsorship kit is now on mindfulmindspod.com. And then lastly, we have all of our services. So I've been doing podcaster contract work for the past 3 years where I produce and edit people's shows. I go behind the scenes and do the organizational management, the guest management, the outreach, the outlining, kind of everything that's on the front end of production. And then I also produce, edit, and audio engineer episodes. And so if you're looking for a podcast producer, please feel free to reach out to us. Our new email is going to be mindfulmindspod@gmail.com. And you can always reach out there. You can also, there's a few buttons on the website where you can click and shoot us an email to book a free 30-minute consultation. And then we also are offering social media management services. So you can check all that out on mindfulmindspod.com. But yeah, anyways, now we can hop into the Q&A. I wanted to make sure I plugged that first because I worked my ass off on it last week. But anyways, okay, we are going to start with some of our Instagram questions. So the first one we got was, what are your thoughts on heaven/hell? Starting off strong. This is kind of a complicated one, to be completely honest, because I think that it has changed and kind of is ever changing the further I get away from religion. When I first left religion, I still was very much so a believer in heaven or hell. A lot of that, to be totally honest, as I've exited and gotten further away from everything religious, I've realized that a lot of my belief in heaven and hell was not belief as much as it was just being fearful of not believing in it. I felt like I'd been taught my whole life that there were these very, very real truths and that could be my destiny, was heaven or hell. And I kind of just had a hard time giving it up entirely. And I still have a hard time giving it up entirely. I think I've let go of the view of heaven and the belief of, or I'm sorry, the belief of hell. I just can't quite wrap my brain around the idea of if this whole Christianity thing is legit, which I don't think it is, but if it is, that a loving God would send anyone who disagrees to hell. That just seems like a pretty aggressive and abusive way to handle a situation, to be totally honest. Like, oh, I disagree with you, and so you're spending eternity in the worst place in the world. So I kind of let go of that one a little while ago because I kind of just came to terms with the fact that this feels a lot more like a way to scare people into believing something than something that's actually legitimate. But I will say the heaven one I've had a hard time with, because I think for my entire life, I have really held on to the promise of heaven. If I was, you know, really struggling with staying here, I've talked a lot about the fact that I've dealt with suicidal ideations for a very long time. And I really held on to heaven as something where it was like, oh, there will be a time and a place where things are good. And there will be a time and a place where my brain doesn't do this shit. And there will be a time and a place where things are whole and healed. And it was a really inspiring and encouraging and hopeful thing to look towards. Additionally, I've talked about this before in our episode with grief, but I don't do well with the death. It is not something that I do well with. It freaks me out. I've never actually really lost anyone close to me. And so it's very frightening to me. And I am quite terrified to figure out how I'm going to feel losing someone close to me now that I'm no longer religious, because I'm quite fearful that that's going to turn into something where all of a sudden there's really no closure to grief. And we talked about this on our episode with my sister, but you can kind of choose when you want to believe this kind of stuff. And so let's say that you do go through a really significant loss and you need to rely on the idea of heaven as comfort to, oh, I'm going to see this person again. That's totally fine. That doesn't make you a hypocrite. That doesn't make you, you know, going back on your word of leaving religion. If that helps you cope, it helps you cope. Like, it truly doesn't matter. It's up to you. And so I think that I haven't entirely shut out the idea of heaven, not because I believe in the logistics of it, but because I feel like I need the hope a little bit. I got so used to living my life with that hope. And the idea of moving forward without it is a little bit too difficult, I think, for me at this time. And there's a chance that when I lose someone, that perspective will change. Maybe the idea of heaven will actually be really triggering. Maybe it'll be losing someone who isn't religious and I'll kind of be freaked out by it. I don't know. But I'd like to think that, I don't know, I think because I've grown up with the idea of an afterlife for the last, you know, 20 years, I don't love the idea of just like abandoning it. And it gives me a little bit of anxiety, which I think is pretty common for a lot of people. Let's see, what is our next one? We've got, is John MacArthur really correct about women? No. I don't think John MacArthur is right about really most things. But yeah, he's got some pretty solid misogynistic shit. And he has the idea that like women are supposed to be in traditional roles, and that women should be in the home, women shouldn't be in ministry, women shouldn't be, I believe he believes that women shouldn't be pastors. Let me look that up because I don't want to bullshit. Let's see. Also, the fact that he has like a translation of the Bible that's called like the John MacArthur translation, I think is speaks to the fact that he just seems like a pretty arrogant asshole. But yeah, no, he has some pretty aggressive views about women teaching. To be honest, I'm not even really going to entertain this question for too long because I think that he's a misogynistic asshole and he's lived his life in pretty traditional Christianity, which is pretty traditionally misogynistic, pretty sexist, pretty awful. And I think that all of these traditional patriarchal roles and you know, you have the patriarch and the matriarch and you have all these very traditional roles in the church and in the home and in relationships, I think all ties into purity culture. And I actually think it's one of the things that really supports and empowers rape culture. I've talked about this before, but when you tell a woman that your role is to serve your husband, it is to be your husband's, honestly, like kind of their servant, their slave, which they don't say blatantly, but that is what the theology pretty much teaches. And when you're teaching someone to do that, that it's very rare for that not to cross over in a sexual way. And what I mean by that is it's very common in these types of patriarchal churches that are very misogynistic and very traditional that basically they have this idea that women are just there to do whatever the man tells them to do. Man is the head of the household. He has God's authority. You have to obey your husband, all of that bullshit. And that can turn very quickly into women feeling pressured and unable to be autonomous in a relationship, unable to speak their own mind in a relationship. And then in a sexual sense, it can turn very quickly into marital rape and marital abuse because women feel pressured to do certain things sexually that maybe they're not comfortable with, or maybe they feel like they have to, or maybe even worse, their husband is forcing them to do things because he's the authority. And so I think it very quickly turns into a pretty slippery slope. And I think it leads to rape. Like, and that might sound drastic, but when you break it down, it really isn't drastic. It's actually quite logical. But yeah, if you look up a quote, I'm just looking at a quote from John MacArthur. That's like the headline of a news thing. If women are in charge, we're in trouble. So yeah, I'd say I don't agree with him on his views on women. Let's see. Let's check out what our next question is. Okay, we've got, how did you escape the mindset of modesty and figure out your dressing style? I love this question. I don't think that my answer is super traditional in terms of how a lot of people figure out how to become a little bit more autonomous and, I don't know, risky in the way that they dress. I always thought that the modesty thing was kind of bullshit, to be totally honest. I've always been like, kind of a flashy person and, you know, for Halloween in like sixth grade wanted to wear like some kind of skimpy dress because I wanted to look kind of sexy. And I think that there's problems with that too, because I think that I kind of grew up, to be totally honest, I grew up in an environment where I was very traumatized, very misunderstood, and got a lot of the narrative of you're really mature for your age. And so I think that pushed me to want to look more mature, dress more mature, etc. And so I was kind of always pushing the boundaries a little bit. Like, you know, we'd go to church camp and I would like bitch about the fact that I couldn't wear a two-piece swimsuit to church camp. And like, it never was something that I thought was legit. And I think part of that too is my family was not crazy on the modesty front. They were very intense about the purity, but the modesty aspect was not really part of that. And I do think another part of that is I grew up as a dancer, and in dance culture, it's actually quite the opposite of modest. It's actually can get really, really close to like sexualizing children. And so a lot of the outfits that we wore were not modest in the slightest. And so I think I had a pretty different, like, I guess, perspective on what modesty meant. And I grew up in a Christian school, and, you know, they had the whole like, don't show your shoulders. And even as like a teenager, I thought that was such bullshit. I thought it was so ridiculous that like, oh my God, like, oh, my shoulder, what's a shoulder gonna do? And so I got to college, had some freedom, started exploring my sexuality in college while still being a Christian and kind of doing the behind closed doors, anything but penetrative sex kind of thing, which is very common for a lot of like college-aged Christians to kind of have this hush-hush sexual exploration. And then started to really step away from Christianity my junior and senior year of college. And like I've mentioned before, and quick trigger warning for sexual assault, this was very, very, very influenced by my sexual assault investigation, because part of my sexual assault investigation was me doing a lot of education on my own about sex education and what leads to rape, and is it the clothes? Is it the modesty? And like, that was a huge part of my healing and my just like my learning journey was, well, no, it doesn't matter what people wore. It you know, really gaining some perspective on that. And I think that informed the way that I viewed modesty. And then, you know, I wasn't like crazy modest in college. I always kind of liked to push boundaries a little bit. And then my junior and senior year, I started like exploring my sexuality and exploring what kind of things I liked to dress in. And now, I mean, it took a while for me to just find how I liked to dress, to be totally honest, because I was, you know, a teenager trying to figure it out. And now I have no problem with dressing a little slutty now and again. I think it's very fun. But my typical outfit is like jeans and a band tee. but I got to a place where it was like, no, I like to look like, I like to dress a little racy. I think it's fun. If you ever see me out at a club, I'm not going to be wearing jeans and a t-shirt. And when I graduated college, I got a boudoir photo shoot done. That was just for me. And that was really healing. It was for my 22nd birthday. I gave it as like a birthday present to myself. I did photos in like lingerie, and then I did some like partially nude photos, and it was really like empowering and healing and cool. And that was a huge part of me really like embracing who I was and my body. And it just kind of became this like full circle healing process of me embracing my body post-sexual assault, embracing my body while dealing with an eating disorder, embracing my body while exiting purity culture. All of these things kind of started, were happening at the exact same time. And so I don't really know what came first, the chicken or the egg. I just know that all of those experiences informed one another and helped me move towards a less purity and modesty centered lifestyle and closet. but yeah, that's a great question. I think that that can be a hard thing, especially if you grew up in a very like restrictive environment with modesty. It can be hard to break out of that. Someone else asked, what are your favorite songs to dance out to when you feel down? I will plug this anywhere, anytime. Maggie Rogers has single-handedly saved my life with her music. Back when I was exiting a abusive relationship, I had never had a panic attack by myself. And I was terrified to have a panic attack by myself. And I started having one and didn't know what to do. And I turned on Maggie Rogers' music and I danced my little heart out. And it was like the most healing thing in the world. And it then became kind of a tradition where like, if I'm having a really hard day, I will put on Maggie Rogers, I'll put on Paramore, I'll put on Fleetwood Mac, Muna, and just like dance my heart out. And it is so healing and so therapeutic. We actually have a whole episode called Dance It Out with Chelsea of Healing Embodied that just talks about dancing and how dance therapy and moving your body is super healing. But yeah, I definitely say Maggie Rogers is my go-to. Someone else says, something you wish you could tell your younger self. That's a big question. I would say, it's okay that your brain works differently, and one day you'll meet people who embrace it and love it. And on the same side of that coin, it's not your fault, and it has nothing to do with the fucking fruits of the spirit. I've talked about this before, but I am not neurotypical, and very often would get told to embrace the fruits of the spirit and to gain self-control when I had a hard time regulating my emotions. And it bred a lot of like shame and self-blame for me, where I felt like everyone else can grasp the fruit of the Spirit except for me. Like, why am I the only one who can't get it? And it kind of created an environment where I felt like it was always my fault. It was always my brain's fault. I just like wasn't good enough or faithful enough or Christian enough to access this amazing self-control that everyone could access except for me. And as an adult, found out that, oh no, I actually have, a brain that works differently. And so it's not about the fact that I don't have self-control. It's about the fact that I basically was trying to fit like a square into like a circular hole kind of a thing where it wasn't going to fit. It wasn't going to work because the way that my brain works, it wasn't that I needed more self-control. It was, I needed, different ways of people explaining things to me. I needed time to get less overstimulated because I get overstimulated very easily. I needed a less, overwhelming sensory environment. I needed, more patience and more explanation and more hugs and all these different things. And in my head, I thought it was just my fault. And so I think if I could go back and tell, like little me anything, it would just be, it's not your fault. And one day you'll figure it out, but just know for right now that it's not the fruits of the Spirit. It's not that you're the only one who can't access them. That's not what's going on. It's not your fault. Your brain just works a little differently and you'll figure it out at some point and it'll make a lot more sense. Someone else asked, how/where do you find space for spirituality post purity culture inundation? Yeah. So trying to find spirituality after Christianity or after religion can be really tough. This episode hasn't released yet, but we actually have an episode coming out with, Kira of the Astrology, which we're going to talk about astrology and, kind of finding spirituality in that post leaving religion, which is a really interesting conversation. I think for me, I actually went straight to crystals and astrology and trying to figure out like, well, actually scratch that. I went to being a progressive Christian first and was trying to figure out how I could still stay in Christianity, but be like a progressive liberal Christian. And it very quickly realized, okay, this is not going to work. And then it kind of went to astronomy or astrology and crystals and like ghosts. And that was a fun thing to explore in college. And we talk about this in the episode with Kira, but it kind of became something where I tried to make it a replacement for religion. And that didn't really work. And now I don't consider myself a very spiritual person. I also am a very black or white person. And I am someone where like the pendulum will swing really far on one side or really far to the other. And so it's hard for me to grow up in an incredibly spiritual and religious environment and then try to find a middle ground where I can still have some spirituality. That's been a really difficult thing for me. And it's also something that I'm not quite sure that I want. And so the middle ground that I've found is more not naming it or classifying it or labeling it, but kind of just like noticing how my body feels when I have these little like crossover moments where I feel like, oh, this is kind of like a spiritual, like heavenly moment. There is a whole philosophy. I believe it's like Icelandic Christianity that believes this. And I actually used to write about it a ton in college. I thought it was just the most interesting thing in the whole world. It's Celtic, but yeah, it's Ireland and Scotland. It's like Celtic, but it's kind of the idea where they're called thin places. And it's a place in time where the space between heaven and earth grows thin and it's easy to encounter the sacred. And when I was deconstructing in college, I came across this like philosophy of thin places. And I thought it was so interesting. I read a book about it. I was like so into it. And started kind of noticing where I would have these like euphoric moments where I felt like things were sacred. And it wasn't necessarily where I felt like I felt God, but just like, oh, I feel like this is sacred. I feel like this is special. I feel like this is, this just feels like a little slice of heaven on earth kind of a thing. And I started recording them. I wrote quite a few blog posts about it. And I would say like now, I don't practice that as much. I don't really like think of it as a thin place, but I do find moments where, you know, I'm in a snow-filled field with my dog and I just have this like euphoric feeling of like, oh, like this is just like the most special and holy moment. Or being in the forest and like going hiking with my partner, or gardening. A lot of it has to do with nature for me recently. And I was not a nature person growing up, but I found as an adult, especially after quarantine, there was a lot of like, oh God, I just like crave nature. I just want to like be in the earth and like touch it. I'm so done with being in my house. And I found that that's where I find the most like sacred moments, but I don't necessarily classify them as spiritual or, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's a complete answer. But I don't necessarily think I have a complete answer for you. So we're just going to roll with that. Let's see. What else do we have? How did you tell your parents about your deconstruction / how did the conversation go? That's also a really good question. I've talked about this a little bit, but I decided I was going to talk about the fact that I was leaving Christianity officially in June 2020. I was going to make a public post. And I wanted to post it publicly because a lot of the people in my life knew me from religion. They knew me as the person that would pray for them, their worship leader. And so I knew that I needed to give some sort of formal announcement of like, hey guys, I'm not going to be that person for you anymore. So apologies, but we're going to peace out. And obviously, I was like, well, I probably need to tell my parents before I make just like a full like a Facebook post, because I felt like that was kind of a prick move to like tell them on Facebook. And so I'm going to be totally honest. I don't remember how I told them. I know I sat them down, but it was a little bit of a blur. But I sat them down and I know I told them I was leaving Christianity. And I've talked about this on my TikTok before, but I think they had an idea. I don't think they had an idea that I was leaving, but I know that they knew I was struggling with it because this was in tandem with my assault investigation. It was in tandem with the misconduct scandal that had happened at my home church, which really shattered my it kind of shattered the illusion for me of like what Christianity was like. And so I had already stopped going to church on holidays. I had stopped going to our home church. And then by this point, this was a few months into the pandemic. So I had stopped going to church for safety reasons. But even before that, I had stopped going to the other church that I had attended because it just like wasn't working for me anymore. And they knew that I'd started cussing and that I had started talking about sex more publicly on my blog and on my Instagram. And they knew we had very differing political beliefs because this was like, you know, a few months before the election. And so I think they had an idea that at the very least, I was not turning out to be the Christian that they had hoped they were going to raise. And so we had a conversation about it. And I think it's the thing that is hard to grasp sometimes is it's going to be pretty grief-filled for families. I have never met someone who has gone through deconstruction or gone through deconversion and not had some sort of grief involved with their family if their family is still very actively religious. It's a really hard thing, I think, for parents to grasp that their child is choosing a different route where in their mind that route is leading to an eternity of suffering. That's a very like hard and heavy and upsetting thing to try to accept. And so it was pretty grief-filled. There was like some bumps with it. Also just kind of some floundering around like, how do we set these boundaries? Like, I don't want you guys to pray over me anymore. How do I tell you that? I don't want to be invited to religious outings anymore. I don't want to be sent Bible verses through text. How do I set these boundaries with you? And a lot of it came through the fact that my parents over the past 5 years have watched me go through a lot of trauma, and we have been able to maintain this sense of they have a curiosity where they have asked questions. I have talked to them, and part of it is I've just been very honest and very open about the ways that their parenting has hurt me, the way that the church has hurt me, the way that I was taught purity culture, how that influenced my sexual assault, like all these different things. And at the beginning, it was very defensive. It was very like, you know, they felt like they were being attacked. And I think that's pretty common. Anytime you come to someone and say like, hey, the way that this happened was abusive, that's not going to be handled super well, I don't think, by anybody. And over the past 5 years, they have like really grown and become really aware of the fact that me telling them, hey, you hurt me in this way as a child, is not me telling them they're bad people. It's just me explaining how something specific harmed me. And we've had a lot of really open conversations. And we've also come to the revelation of, hey, you guys sent me to Christian school, you sent me to youth group, but you guys weren't sitting in youth group, you weren't sitting in those Christian schools. And my parents did not grow up religious. And so they entered evangelical Christianity when they were 30, and they had no idea what youth group looks like and what purity culture looks like in a youth group, or what it looks like at a church camp, or what it looks like in a Bible class. And so we weren't telling them because we were kids, and I didn't know that what I was being taught was not okay. But we actually have, I found out as an adult that a lot of the things that I was taught in youth group and Bible class actually really differ from the theology that my parents believe in. And my parents found out that, like, no, we actually don't agree with a lot of the stuff that you were taught, and we would not have taught you that. And so there was definitely a disconnect where there wasn't an awareness that the churches that we were going to, the school we were brought up in, was harming us, because me and my sister didn't know to tell my parents it was harming us because we had no idea it was harmful. And my parents had no idea it was harming us because they weren't there and we weren't telling them because we didn't know we were supposed to. So it's kind of just this like vicious cycle. And so there's been a lot of really open and hard and grief filled and kind of abrasive conversations that have had to happen where I've been pretty brutally honest with them. And in the last few years, especially, they have like really learned how to take that honesty and not view it as critical, which I really applaud. And they have been very honest about like, come to us and tell us like if we messed you up, like tell us how we messed you up. If the church messed you up, tell us how they messed you up. And they've made some really, in my opinion, good decisions regarding, you know, leaving a church and reorienting how they're going to approach church and evangelicalism to an extent, reorienting how they're parenting my younger sister. We still definitely don't agree on some things. Our politics could not be further from from each other, but I think they've done a lot of growth in the last like 3 years, especially on just learning how to parent an adult. It's fucking weird. It's very weird to like have an adult child and have that child come to you and say, hey, I'm actually really messed up. Like, this is why. And some of it is what you did. That's a weird, icky feeling. It's one of the reasons I literally don't want children, is because I just think it sounds so difficult and so nuanced and like such an incredibly big task. And it scares the shit out of me. And so I really applaud them, because the more that I've talked to other people who had really hard childhoods, they don't have that from their parents. Their parents have not been willing to admit that they made a mistake. And my parents have had a very intense shift of attitude in the past 3 years, 4 years, that where they've become really open to hearing how they hurt us and open to trying to make amends to those things as much as possible and adjust how they're interacting with us as adults, which I really appreciate and commend. And I think it takes a lot of humility to be able to do that. I know that's not everyone's experience, so I don't know how helpful that will be with you, your personal experiences, but that's kind of, unfortunately, the only advice I have is going on my own experience. Let's see, we've got another one. Thoughts on the future of Christianity. Will it cease to be relevant? Ooh, that's an interesting question. That's kind of a big question too. Will it cease to be relevant? No, I don't think it will. We're talking about something that has thousands and thousands and thousands of years of like backup. Yeah, no, I think it's around for the long haul. I think it's going to become a lot more political. I think that for a while, evangelical Christianity was riding the coattails a little bit of like, I think evangelical Christianity was kind of one and the same with like, oh, traditional household values. Like we love God, we love church, and we love wives who bake pies. It was kind of like all on the same side of the coin. And I think that now religion, I don't think it's going to cease to be relevant, but I do think it's going to become even more political, and it's going to become something that has a reputation for being discriminatory. I think that that's most likely what's going to happen. I think it's already happening. I think that people are pretty fucking fed up with religion. Or I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a massive, massive, massive rebrand, which they're already doing to an extent. I think that some churches are just going to go more and deeper into politics. And then I think some churches might rebrand and go the opposite way and try to become as like open and welcoming and kind and loving as possible, because they're realizing that they're losing money and they're losing people because of the way that they are discriminating. All right. For those of you who have been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scouts Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scouts Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple: Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting! I posted this yesterday on my Instagram, but REAP, which if for those of you who don't know REAP, they are a organization that tries to fight for legal rights for LGBTQ plus students in religious colleges. And REAP stands for Religious Exemption Accountability Project. But they posted yesterday a post about the fact that people are leaving Christianity because of LGBTQ discrimination. And they said that, quote, an online survey of people who left Christianity found that the biggest reason people cited for leaving is LGBTQ plus discrimination. 22% of people surveyed cited LGBTQ discrimination as their initial reason for questioning their religion, and 25% cited LGBTQ discrimination as the final straw that pushed them to leave. And then the other reasons are behavior of believers, intellectual integrity, politics, women's rights, purity culture, mental health, us versus them, civil rights, abuse or hiding abuse, lack of relevance, or moral misalignment. And there's a few other mixed in there, but I mean, the majority of these reasons are like political or human rights or justice centered. And so I think that we're going to get some statistics that are showing that the church is losing members and it's losing money. And I think that, and like any business, there's going to have to be a marketing shift. There's going to have to be a pretty massive rebrand to try to get people to come back, because they've become so much more blatant and aggressive with their political beliefs. And it's so obviously discriminatory. And so I think that that's going to come and bite them in the butt from a marketing perspective. And yeah, I don't necessarily think it's going to be cease to be relevant. And I think Christianity will probably exist forever, but I think that it's going to, I think it's going to have a rebrand. I think that the rebrand is either going to be all right, like we are now the Republicans religion and like really diving deep into politics, or it's going to be the opposite and trying to say, oh, fuck, all right, we were a little bit too political and now we lost a whole bunch of people and we lost a whole bunch of money and we got to fix this. Because apparently the way that we're doing this is no longer compatible with the cultural zeitgeist. So I think that's more likely kind of the way that it could turn. And then I have another question. What was it like telling your parents that you're moving in with your partner? my mom wasn't surprised at all. I called my mom and I told her that me and my partner wanted to come over and hang out. And I was literally outside in my parents' backyard. And I was like, hey, mom, I have to tell you something. And she said, are you married? And I said, no. And she said, are you engaged? And I said, no. And she goes, you're moving in with Adam? And I said, yes. And she was like, all right. there's very little I think that I can do to shock my parents at this point. I went from being a very avid religious person to making a podcast and a blog that talks about sex and reviews sex toys. And that was very jarring for them to find out. And that was 3 years ago. So I think it would be pretty rare for me to do something that actually, I think probably the thing that would surprise them the most is if I was like, yeah, I'm pregnant and I'm coming back to Christianity. I think that would be the shocker. I don't think anything else that I can do at this point would really be shocking because I think they're very aware that I am no longer like the Christian kiddo. So I've also lived with a partner before. And so it was not surprising to them in the slightest. But yeah, I think, and I've always been a little bit of the rambunctious, chaotic, uncontrollable kiddo. So I think that they are a little bit used to me being unpredictable at the very least. Someone else said ice cream or popsicles. That depends. Is it really hot outside? If it's really hot outside, popsicles. If it's not, ice cream. It also depends on what I have to do that day because I'm lactose intolerant. So if I have a lot to do, probably popsicle. If I don't and I have lactate on hand, ice cream. somebody else asks, what does mindfulness mean to you? I think that people kind of assume, I think when they see the podcast is called Mindful Minds, that like even I'll invite guests on and they'll be like, oh, you want to talk about mindfulness? And I'm like, actually, we don't really talk about mindfulness at all. but I think I've never been a meditation person. I've never been like a gratitude journal person. It just is not compatible with the way my brain works. But I think that for me, I view mindfulness as just a way of being more intentional about things. And I think that you can be really mindful about a lot of things. It doesn't necessarily have to be like meditative. And that's why I named the podcast Mindful Minds. It wasn't from the perspective of like, hey, let's teach you how to be mindful. It was more from the perspective of how can we approach complicated topics and nuanced topics with intentionality and mindfulness and just a lot of thought put into it to make sure that we're exploring the topic from all angles and being sensitive as to how we talk about it and being sensitive and aware and intentional about how we integrate it into our life. And so I think that that's more what it means to me. I know that's not really like the traditional view of what mindfulness means, but that's kind of, yeah, I never had the intention of the podcast being like a traditional mindfulness podcast because I don't know shit about mindfulness from like a gratitude meditative perspective because it doesn't make sense to me. I do yoga and that's about as far as I can get into meditation, sitting there and trying to meditate. Even like the last 30 seconds of a yoga class where they're like, okay, we're going to like sit, you guys can lay flat on the mat and like let all the thoughts get away from you. I'm like, yo, I think I have ADHD or I have something and my therapist hasn't figured it out, but at the very least, I'm a very anxious person and I cannot sit and be quiet for that long without thinking of something. That is not how my brain works. And so, I've never been like a meditation mindfulness person, but I think I just view it as being intentional and being thoughtful about things. Cause I've always been a very thoughtful person. I've always been a thinker. I've never really been like a meditator. I don't know if that makes any sense. And then we had a few from TikTok that I did answer in short little blurbs on my TikTok, but I wanted to take a moment and answer on here as well if you're not a follower of the TikTok. So I had somebody ask, what did you do with your Bibles? I want to throw mine away, but the tiniest part of me is still terrified, which is such a valid question. And I'm amazed I've never been asked that before. I threw some of mine away and I donated some. I purged my closet, my childhood closet, in May 2020, because I was moving out of my parents' house, and I had been in college for 3 years and then came home for like 6 months due to the pandemic. And then I was moving out and wanted to like get rid of all of my shit. And I had already decided I was leaving Christianity. I'd already announced it. And I found like all of my old Bibles and my devotionals and my journals and my celebrity pastor books. We had some Judah Smith. We had some Stephen Furtick. We had Mr. Max Lucado, which I did keep some of his children's books because You Are Special hits me in my heart in a way that I cannot explain. We threw away Miss Lisa Turkhurst, Made to Crave, because that shit gives you eating disorders and no one needs to have that near them. So I threw away like all of the celebrity pastor expert books because I kind of just figured no one needs these. Like no one in the world needs to ever read these. They're not helpful. They're harmful. Even if you want to be a Christian, I think this theology is fucking whack. And so I just threw all of those away. And then anything that I felt like was actually like worth reading, I donated. And then I think I donated like one. I had quite a few Bibles because I had Bibles from my childhood. I think I might have saved like my very first Bible and put it in like the attic, but I think everything else I either gave away or tossed. And then in the comments, the people gave some really funny advice. Someone said they burned most of their evangelical books one page at a time during 2020. Someone said, I put mine in a chamber under my house that regularly floods. That's one of my favorite ones. Someone else said I gave mine to a local church, left it on the stairs. Someone else said I burned mine. Someone said my Bible is in my garage because I'm not brave enough to throw it out yet, which I want to also address the fact that it doesn't make you a hypocrite if you have decided to leave Christianity and you still have religious things in your environment. Basically, whatever makes you feel like whatever makes you feel the best, whatever accelerates your healing and isn't triggering to you, I think is the right answer. Whether that is burning them, throwing them away, keeping them in a box in the closet, keeping the ones that have sentimental value to you and throwing away the ones that are triggering, like anything that is healing for you, I think is the right answer. I don't think there is an overall answer that trumps the rest of them, just whatever is healing for you. And then we had another question on TikTok about no contact. I've mentioned multiple times about going no contact with my church. And so someone asked if I could make a video about going no contact. So for me, my no contactness had two parts to it. I kind of went no contact in one way very intentional, one way a little accidental. So in 2018, I've talked about this before, but my home church pastor got kicked out for misconduct. And I basically went no contact with every single person at that church who decided to stick with the pastor, defend the pastor, or remain at the church. Because basically the pastor got kicked out, started a new church, and anyone who's followed him, I do not speak to. And then I actually felt like anybody who stayed, I also really wasn't okay with being with having them in my life because the church did not fire the executive pastor who enabled him. They didn't fire the board. They didn't fire people who covered up his shit. And so it just felt like they took away the big problem but didn't take away all the enablers. And for me, I didn't feel like that was enough. I actually ended up speaking with the new head pastor on a phone call, and he was kind of asking me like, hey, like, I've heard you're not speaking well about the church. Like, what's going on? And I explained like, yeah, you guys like kicked him out, but like you waited and when you first found out, first of all, you've known about this for 4 years. And second of all, when you finally kicked him out, you did it like begrudgingly. You defended him at a public meeting to the public. You acted like it was something that you regretted and that you didn't think it was fair that he was getting his license taken away. And you waited a few weeks to even say, oh, never mind. Like, we actually do think he should be kicked out. And to me, the whole thing was very cowardly. I think that the way they handled it was horrible. I think their HR and their accountability was not doing what it should. I know from personal experience, I reported things to HR that literally never ended up going anywhere. And one of the reasons for that is they're reported to the same person. She, not the HR person. The HR person did everything they could, but they only had so much power. And they ended up getting put on the desk of the same executive pastor who enabled the head pastor. And so for me, I didn't feel like anyone who was still going to that church had really done enough, had enough critical thinking to like realize that this was not an environment that was good. And so I went no contact with pretty much everybody from that church and set a very firm boundary. I unfriended pretty much everybody on Facebook, everybody on Instagram, like completely disconnected myself from it. And then the second wave of no contact was when I decided to announce that I was leaving Christianity. So I did a post, and at the very bottom of that post, I did like a caveat of saying, if you comment anything about you disagreeing or you thinking that I made the wrong choice or that you're going to be praying for me, I'm blocking you. I'm blocking you immediately. And so I ended up losing a huge part of my community and going no contact with them after I announced it. I had a lot of people in my DMs telling me I was wrong. I had a few people like being super condescending and annoying. And then pretty soon after that, I became a lot more outspoken on my social media about injustices in churches. And I ended up going no contact with a lot of the community after that as well, because the way that people responded was really inappropriate. And very obvious that we did not share the same ethics. So that was kind of like my no wave, or my two waves of no contact. And the first one was definitely like more traditionally no contact of like, hey, you guys are out of my life, I'm over it. But yeah, I think the block button is there for a reason. I am so pro the block button. I have so many people blocked on my TikTok. It is unreal. To the point where it's hard to even manage them because there's so many people. And truly, that is because I try to make my space safe. I try to make it safe for myself. I try to make it safe for other people dealing with religious trauma. And I think that for some reason, Christians can't quite get the message, get a grasp on the fact that them making condescending comments about the fact that I'm praying for you, the church didn't hurt you, God did, he wants you to come back. All of these different like evangelical comments where they're trying to minister to you, or you were never a real Christian, or, you know, you don't have enough faith, anything like that. That's not welcome in my space. It never will be. And so I have a very hard and fast boundary of like, if you make those types of comments, you're out. There's no one that I need in my life that is going to be acting that way. And I think the thing that's interesting is social media has made it so that people feel like they need to have a lot more people in their inner circle than they do, where it's like, oh, there's so many people available, I need all these people to like me. And the reality is I have, you know, an inner circle of probably three people. And those people would never say those things to me because they know how hurtful they are. And they know that it hurts me. And it also often hurts them because those three people in my inner circle also deal with religious trauma. And so, they're aware, and I've got them, I've got my sister, and I've got my partner. That's pretty much it. And I have no desire to have everyone be in my inner circle, nor do you have the privilege or the right to be in my inner circle. And I have no tolerance for having people in my space that are not going to respect my boundaries, because it's my life and I'm the one who has to deal with the backfiring and the triggering and the trauma of if I let people into my space that are harmful and triggering and condescending. I'm the one who has to deal with that. I'm the one who it hurts. And so it's up to me to hold those boundaries. And I have, I've never really had the hardest time with setting those types of boundaries, which are just like hard and fast boundaries. I've had harder times with nuanced boundaries, but the hard and fast, like, hey, you're cut off boundaries have always come pretty natural to me. So yeah, I set those boundaries pretty firm. And I think that boundaries are the number one thing you have to keep in mind when it comes to no contact. And then let's see, I had one other question on TikTok that I wanted to address. Oh no, sorry. This is our last one from Instagram. Biggest or most impactful thing you've learned this past year? That's a good one. That's a hard one too. I would say, nuance, probably. That's a kind of an ever growing thing that I'm learning about. Like I said, I'm a very black and white person. I don't do very well with the gray. And I think that for a while, I thought that the only way to hold fast and true to my beliefs was to be very intense about them. And I think that part of what comes with having kind of fundamentalist black and white beliefs is that you put yourself in boxes. And so it's also very hard to be humble or to admit when you're wrong or when you made a mistake, when you are very black or white in your thinking. Because if you admit that you're wrong, there's no nuance. It's either, okay, if I'm wrong, I must be a bad person. And I think that one of the things I've learned in the last year is learning to admit when I'm wrong and learning to sit in the nuance of things and say, oh, you know what? That actually probably wasn't the right way to go. And here's why. And that doesn't mean I'm a bad person. That just means I made a mistake. Holding my inner child with nuance of not hating the younger version of myself for the decisions they made to keep myself alive. I had a hard time with that when I first started doing inner child work of like, okay, well, if I made a mistake, I must be bad. If my parents made a mistake, they must be bad. If my friends make mistakes, they must be bad. And I had a very short tolerance for mistakes. And so I think learning the nuance and the empathy while also maintaining those firm boundaries, because doing those two things at the same time can be really difficult because sometimes they're contradictory. And so learning how to have firm boundaries and not let go of my boundaries, because I still want to have firm boundaries. I still want to make sure that I create a space where I feel safe, but I also want to make sure that I'm not just being aggressive and abrasive and very fundamentalist for no reason. And so I think a lot of that has been like looking back on how I deconstructed and how I grew at the beginning of that journey. Like I went straight to being a very angry person on social media. If you followed me on social media during 2019 to about 2021, I was like angry as fuck and was just super aggressive. And it was very my way or the highway. And it was very just like, it was a little too much. And I think I learned that like, hey, I don't have to like hate everything about everyone. I can chill out a little bit while still also maintaining really firm boundaries and having a very strong passion for justice. Those things can exist at the same time, but I don't always have to be this very fundamentalist thinker. And that can be really hard to do when you're coming out of religion, because religion teaches you to be fundamentalist. And so that can be really difficult. I've even been cautious about it with my TikTok. Like I have some TikToks that are kind of shady. And one of the reasons I do that is because those are the ones that perform and, you know, whatever, you got to work the algorithm. But I do try to be kind of careful about being super fundamentalist on TikTok. I try to do some content that encourages people to, you know, live in the gray and learn. And that can be difficult and it can be weird. And it's a learning curve. I think it'll always be a learning curve for me. But yeah, I would say nuance. Okay, well, that wraps up our Q&A. Thank you guys so much for sending in questions. I always find it really fun when people have specific questions, and I think they're all so common and like relatable questions. And I've asked myself them, and I think they're all very relatable and common questions. And I honestly wish that I was able to ask them to someone while I was going through what I was going through. So it's always really cool that you guys consider me a resource for that, and I appreciate it, and I will never stop answering your questions. So please continue to ask them, whether it's just in DMs or on TikTok, whatever. I love to answer questions. I think it's very fun, and I want to be a resource for you guys. And I appreciate that this community has turned into a community where we support each other and we try to support each other through our healing. So thank you guys so much for listening. Let me know if you want another Q&A episode. I would love to do another episode in the future. I think that'd be so fun. And I'd love to do one on maybe a different topic. If you guys have something specific that you'd like me to cover, let me know. And then we also did release another episode this week. So we did a double release today. So you can listen to this episode, then you can go over and listen to our episode on perfectionism with Dr. Manisha, which is a super interesting conversation. And actually, I think it goes really well with religion and religious trauma, because many of us struggle with perfectionism because we weren't allowed to make mistakes or we thought we were going to go to hell. So go check out that episode. It's super interesting and it is out now. And other than that, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also find the podcast and the blog on Instagram at Mindful Minds Pod and visit us online at mindfulmindspod.com. Like I said, we have all those new features to our website, so please go and check those out. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.